Aluminium.
What is it good for?
Well, many things in industry and technology, but when it comes to your body, absolutely nothing. The aim of this video is to provide an overview of various issues related to aluminium toxicity, including how we have reached this point, the excuses for why it is added to vaccines, what it is doing to people, and potential ways to correct chronic aluminium poisoning. It is a huge topic, and it is not my intention to overwhelm viewers with heavy details of the biochemistry and physiological effects. The good news is that you don't need to know too many details to protect yourself from a toxin that might otherwise cause havoc in your body. In fact, the solutions are right at your fingertips. Before I get into the focus of this video, I'll briefly cover an issue that I think is a distraction, and that's whether aluminium is a heavy metal or not. In some of my videos, I have mentioned that aluminium is a heavy metal, which always provokes multiple emails saying, "No, Dr. Sam, aluminium is a light metal." It is certainly true that Wikipedia states that it is a light metal, with the citation given as Smithell's Light Metals Handbook. However, as stated in a 2019 article, according to the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, or IUPAC, the term heavy metal may be a meaningless term because there is no standardized definition for a heavy metal. Some light metals or metalloids are toxic, while some high-density metals are not. The article goes on to explain that there are heavy metals such as iron, which are essential for our living processes, and there are heavy metals such as gold that are not toxic to us. Previously, I have used the term heavy metal toxicity as it seemed to connect with the most people. They knew it was usually referring to lead, mercury, aluminium, and other metal toxicity in living beings. However, in recent years, there seems to have been a deliberate gaslighting campaign with the narrative that no, aluminium is not a heavy metal, so shouldn't be lumped in with nasties like mercury. So, I will resolve not to refer to heavy metal toxicity going forward, given there is no definitive scientific definition of heavy metals, and also to avoid giving the impression that the density of a metal is what makes it toxic. I think it is best to state exactly what we are talking about, and in this video I'll be talking about aluminium toxicity. In this context, its density compared to other metals is not one of our primary concerns. We also don't want to be distracted with peripheral issues by those trying to justify the use of toxins in pharmaceuticals. And one more thing. Yes, I know that it is pronounced aluminum in the United States, but to the rest of the world, including in the Antipodes, it is aluminium. Aluminium is one of the most common elements making up the Earth's composition and is said to be the most abundant metal in the Earth's crust. Pure aluminium, however, is rarely found in nature, where it is almost universally found in mineral form, oxides or silicates. The latter form will have relevance when we discuss detox strategies. Compared to other metals, the employment of aluminium by mankind was relatively late, and it wasn't until the start of the 20th century that its use became widespread. Then, over the last century, annual production accelerated massively as it increased almost every year. The important point in this context is that you may hear people trying to portray aluminium as relatively harmless by saying it is all around us in nature, when this is deceptive, as its biological properties are different after it is refined, and it is much more dangerous when injected. When I was training as a doctor, we weren't given much information about aluminium, and with regard to it being an adjuvant in vaccines, it was barely glossed over. We were mostly instructed to watch for aluminium toxicity in chronic kidney failure in people on hemodialysis. This is because kidney failure impairs the body's ability to excrete aluminium, and hemodialysis doesn't get rid of it effectively either. Aluminium is not an essential element for our bodies, and all of its biological effects appear to be detrimental. The toxic actions of aluminium are well described in the scientific literature, and perhaps most notably the association with neurodegenerative processes and what is known as Alzheimer's disease. From a terrain perspective, we would say that it is an unwanted toxin that triggers inflammatory responses in the body. If this is not corrected, the body will do its best to wall off its effects and localized complications will result. Aluminium's ability to cause inflammation is why it is a component of many vaccines, where they can call it an adjuvant. The CDC states that an adjuvant is an ingredient used in some vaccines that helps create a stronger immune response in people receiving the vaccine. In other words, adjuvants help vaccines work better. So, let's clear up a few things here. The quote, stronger immune response, actually means that it causes more tissue inflammation and damage, often indicated by the subsequent detection of so-called antibodies in the recipient. And from our perspective, there can be no, quote, immunity to alleged pathogens, whether they are imagined, such as viruses, or real, such as bacteria, but never demonstrated to be the causal agent of disease in controlled scientific studies. The CDC goes on to claim that aluminium salts, such as aluminium hydroxide, aluminium phosphate, and aluminium potassium sulfate, have been used safely in vaccines for more than 70 years. But they don't provide any scientific data for how this was determined. There is a citation on the webpage for a paper titled Updated Aluminium Pharmacokinetics Following Infant Exposures Through Diet and Vaccination, which was funded by the United States FDA. It concludes that episodic exposure to vaccines that contain aluminium adjuvant continue to be extremely low risk to infants, and that the benefits of using vaccines containing aluminium adjuvant outweigh any theoretical concerns. It is, of course, much easier for us terrain theorists to dismiss this claim outright because there are no possible benefits from vaccines. In any case, how did they determine aluminium to be safe when injected into the body multiple times from birth? They used, quote, the level set by the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. And how were these so-called safe levels established? As explained in the blog Aluminium and Vaccines, History and Toxicity, if you were to read through the 300 plus pages of this report, you would find that it's full of information on scientific research, which aims to determine the effect of aluminium exposure on the body, whether ingested, inhaled, etc., at what exposure limit it has been found safe or harmful, and the scientific research which supports the proposed safe limits. You would also find that the amount of aluminium that is allowed in a vaccine is 0.85 milligrams per dose, or 850 micrograms. However, there's some important information missing when it comes to understanding why this amount was chosen. This dose was scientifically determined to be the amount of aluminium which is most effective when used as an adjuvant in vaccines. This chosen amount is not based on safety. In fact, in the ATSDR document, there are zero references to any published scientific research on why the 0.85 milligram limit is considered safe. Stated a different way, there is no experimental scientific evidence of any kind that proves this amount of aluminium is safe to inject. We can see that childhood vaccination schedules are comprised of a large number of vaccines that contain significant amounts of aluminium. So how did the establishment carry out this operation in broad daylight? For that, we can listen to one of the world's biggest and most important vaccine promoters, Dr. Paul Offit.
So then the question becomes, is it harmful? And you should realize that assuming you live on the planet Earth, you're going to be exposed to aluminum salts in water, aluminum salts in the food that we eat, and at far greater quantities than you ever would get being exposed to a vaccine. Now, a parent could say, yeah, but isn't it true that if you eat aluminum or drink aluminum salts, that a lesser quantity of that is absorbed from the intestine into the bloodstream than if you inject it directly into the arm, in which case the body doesn't have any chance to reject that aluminum? That's true. I mean, by definition, 100% of the aluminum that you give as a vaccine is going to be absorbed, whereas only about 1% of what's given, taken by mouth, either in the water we drink or the breast milk that we drink or the infant formula that we drink or the food that we eat is going to actually then go from the intestine into the bloodstream. That is true. It's only about 1%, but there's so much more in what you drink and what you eat than you're ever going to get from a vaccine.
So he obfuscates aluminium exposure levels here by suggesting that the amount being injected is tiny compared to how much someone is exposed to over a lifetime. However, typical environmental exposure is over a long period of time, and the body has a chance to clear it. Whereas an injected vaccine delivers the entire dose all at once, and the body has no chance to eliminate it through its usual clearance mechanisms.
In other words, studies that have been done looking at people who get aluminum-containing vaccines that then look at the blood levels of aluminum to see whether there's clearly been a bump in the aluminum then that is in your bloodstream doesn't show a bump because you are eating or drinking so much aluminum on this planet. So it isn't harmful.
Now he is claiming that we simply look at blood levels of aluminium to assess exposure, when in fact, far more injected aluminium will end up being chronically sequestered in the brain and bone. Levels of aluminium in the blood will mostly reflect recent exposure and will not assess how much has been absorbed into the brain and bone. So those previously injected with aluminium may have similar blood levels to the unjabbed, despite the former having a much higher total amount of aluminium in their body. Additionally, as pointed out in the Aluminium in Vaccines History and Toxicity blog, Offit provides zero evidence that injected aluminium is safe. He doesn't cite any safety studies that were performed because the required ones have never been done. He justifies the use of aluminium by suggesting everyone is being exposed to it, so why would a little more be a problem? This is not scientific evidence, it is smoke and mirrors for the vaccine industry. Many of you have asked if I'm aware of chemist Christopher Exley and his research on aluminium and vaccines. Yes, I am. Some have also asked if I could interview him on my platform, and yes, we will try to organise that at some stage. No doubt he can talk more freely since he was forced out of his long-term research position as a professor of Keele University. First of all, he questioned the UK's COVID restrictions in 2020, but the landmine he stepped on was probably suggesting that aluminium in vaccines could cause problems. This, I know, is pointing out vaccine issues precipitated the end of my work in mainstream research medicine as well. Anyway, I'll send this video to Dr. Exley and we'll see if he would like to come on my channel for a chat, as he knows more about aluminium toxicity than most of us ever will. In the meantime, we have this 2016 paper by Dr. Exley titled The Toxicity of Aluminium in Humans, where he writes, human exposure to aluminium is inevitable and perhaps inestimable. Aluminium's free metal cation, Al3+, aqueous, is highly biologically reactive, and biologically available aluminium is non-essential and essentially toxic. Biologically reactive aluminium is present throughout the human body, and while really it can be acutely toxic, much less is understood about chronic aluminium intoxication. And this hits the nail on the head. They teach doctors almost exclusively about acute aluminium toxicity, which is almost never seen, while ignoring chronic toxicity because it could result in major problems for various industries, including Big Pharma. If the public find out their children are being poisoned by aluminium with all kinds of potential problems later in their lives, the backlash will be huge. Dr. Exley points out the flaws in the reassurances that have been given with regard to aluminium in vaccines, stating, an argument which is often brought out with respect to the putative toxicity of aluminium in vaccines is that the amount of aluminium injected is insignificant with respect to human exposure by other routes. However, this thinking does not account for what we now know unequivocally, which is that significant amounts of aluminium adjuvant can be collected from injection sites and transported throughout the body and delivered in potentially acute amounts to target sites, which would normally only receive or be subjected to very low but persistent exposure to aluminium. Recent evidence not only points towards the cellular trafficking of aluminium away from the injection site, but also its potential delivery to the brain. Imagine the potential catastrophic consequences of such for an infant receiving multiple vaccinations containing aluminium adjuvants during their first few months of life. We are all aware of how difficult it is to broach the issue of vaccines with friends and family, but one of the best ways is to ask parents whether they know how much aluminium is injected into their children if they follow the childhood vaccination schedule. The majority are not even aware that their children are being injected with aluminium. In fact, many doctors that enthusiastically recommend vaccines seem unaware of this as well. The good news is that if you or your loved ones have been injected with aluminium in the past, there may be a very simple way to help your body detoxify. The role of silicon in aiding aluminium excretion has been known for some time. In 1996, a paper titled "The Role of Silicic Acid in the Renal Excretion of Aluminium" appeared in the Annals of Clinical and Laboratory Science. In this study, they found that the ingestion of silicic acid significantly increased the excretion of aluminium in the urine. When it was repeated with alcohol and water for comparison, the same results were not seen. As explained in the study, the magnitude of the rise in urinary aluminium excretion cannot be accounted for from the aluminium content of the drinks themselves. In other words, the silicic acid being ingested was flushing aluminium out of the body. My husband Mark, who operates his own brewery in our home, was pleased to see that the source of monosilicic acid for the volunteers in the study came in the form of 1.13 litres or 2 pints of beer. Our friend Steve Falconer from Spacebusters has already beaten us to it with this revelation, and one of his latest videos features none other than Chris Exley.
By the way, for those of you with loved ones needlessly suffering from autism, Asperger's, Alzheimer's, and dementia, and your doctors are clueless to help as usual, I'm going to let you in on a huge secret. SiOH4 is the chemical name for silicic acid, a compound of silicon, oxygen, and hydrogen, regarded as the parent substance from which creates a large family, the silicates, of the minerals and salts we are talking about in this film.
In 3 years, because a few years ago, we published a paper which showed a very simple way to get aluminium out of human beings. If you give them a mineral water, which is rich in silicon, rich in something called silicic acid, SiOH4, the biologically available form of silicon, they pee aluminium in their urine. You can titrate aluminium from your body with a silicon-rich mineral water. And in this case, we were able to show we could do so in people with Alzheimer's disease. We now have programs up and running for healthy volunteers, people in their 20s, we have a program up and running for Alzheimer's disease where we're extending the period of time over which they are taking the silicon-rich mineral water to around 13 weeks. And we're just starting a program for Parkinson's disease. Again, I'm not giving anything away by telling you that we are going to be and have already been successful in removing aluminium from all of these types of people by simply giving you something you can buy on the supermarket shelf. I'm going to break all protocol and tell you that the one water that worked incredibly well was a water called Volvic in the United Kingdom, made by a French company called Volvic. Made by a French company called Danone. But I can't tell you that now, because since Danone went into an agreement with us to work in this area, they then told me They no longer want to work with us. They no longer want to be associated with the possibility that aluminium, removal of aluminium might be an important thing. They will benefit from it at some point because they are one of the few companies that have a silicon-rich mineral water. The one that we work with as well is a company called Spritzer, who will be more than happy for me to mention them in Asia and based in Malaysia. And their mineral water is even more effective than Volvic. It contains even more silicon. There are no downsides to silicon. Silicon is good. Silicic acid, SiOH4, is good. Like many of you, I am contacted on a regular basis by people who have been adversely affected, sometimes by vaccination, but and other aluminium-related issues. I have been contacted by parents of girls who have taken the human papillomavirus vaccination, and they have said, is there anything we can do? Is it got anything to do with aluminium? I don't tell them it's got anything to do with aluminium. That's not my role. I am not a doctor. I would simply tell them, look, if there is anything to do with aluminium, try taking a silicon-rich mineral water. I tell them which one. I am increasingly getting emails back 6 months, a year later. They're telling me that their daughter is better. I'm not making this up. Their daughter is better.
Spritzer, the water Dr. Exley mentions is good. But here in New Zealand, we have mineral waters even richer in silica. For example, Antipodes has 73 grams per litre, and the premium Smith Water has 74 grams per litre. Smith Water is the product of Mark's co-author, Dr. John Bevan Smith, and hopefully we will see it available for retail in New Zealand one day in the future. Otherwise, check out which silica-rich water you are able to source in your area. So, there you have it. The easiest way to flush aluminium from your system or your children's, particularly if they have been subjected to aluminium-containing vaccines, is to drink silica-rich mineral water. Keep in mind, if we're talking about chronic toxicity, this may have to be done for months or even years. If the case is severe, then copious amounts can be consumed along with sweating through exercise and or saunas. And of course, the best thing to do is avoid undue exposure, whether that be through vaccines, antacids, aluminium utensils and cookware, or contaminated water and food. As always, taking into account your total lifestyle is the best way to resist toxic insults and maintain optimal health. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com